so it literally has to compile.
I can't upgrade it.
It had to assemble that entire chain. And it was like multiple gigabytes. Maybe like 300 gigs or something.
What more?
I don't remember how the specifics, but I believe it took 30 seconds to finally print if it's even or odd for that big of a number.
Okay.
And it's in C++, so you bet it's
trying to. So it was doing it lightning fast with a slow way. Okay, got it.
Yeah.
Okay, guys. Tim's still standing door duty, but here's the thing I want to just give a quick thought about when I'm doing a presentation. If you have any questions, put your hand up or even just blurt them out. I'm happy to interact, and I prefer to interact. And what I'm going to talk about tonight are my adventures in off-grid solar. What I have got here is a project that I have built just because, I don't know, just because. I guess I'm hacking my power, for lack of a better description. Hey, Kyle.
Hello.
So I guess I'm hacking my power, for lack of a better description. Quick disclaimer, this is probably not up to code. Kyle is going to spot that very easily, I'm sure. Your insurer is not likely to be amused. This is mostly low voltage but high current and therefore quite capable of starting a fire. In short, if you act on what you learn here, you do so at your own risk. That does not mean that I am discouraging you from doing so. Yes, go ahead.
If any of you are interested in doing it, I do have some electrician training, so hit me up. I can help out. Make your insurer a little bit
happier. Rock on. Okay. See, this is how the community builds. This is beautiful. Thank you, Katie.
I just have one quick question. Does your wife know quite how flammable your husband is? I have a feeling she'd have stopped you a long time ago.
Are you kidding? She's behind me the whole way.
You know what? More power to her.
This is why strawberry rocks. Okay, some quick basics. I'm going to cover a couple things that probably most of you already know real quick, but I want to make sure that everybody is on a good starting point. The first and most important thing is we need to understand a quick thing about the difference between direct current and alternating current. When you have direct current, you have a continuous flow of electricity from the negative pole over to the positive pole. When you have alternating current, it kind of does this sort of thing. It comes along for a bit, it slows down, it stops, it goes the other way, it slows down, it stops. Make a note of those stops. We're going to be touching on those a little bit later. We have connectors that are going to be used to plug things into one another. These two are going to be very familiar, or at least the one on the left is going to be very familiar to anybody that lives in North America. That is the NEMA 515 plug. On the other side, we have the NEMA 520 plug, which maybe some of you have not seen the plug itself, but I guarantee you've seen the socket. In fact, if you look at any of the outlets in this room,
why?
You will see the socket because it is rated for 20 amps and not 15.
But just why is one perpendicular?
So you can't plug it into one that's only
the idea.
15. Okay.
Bingo. Exactly.
Okay.
Thank you, Leo.
Sense.
Yes, you're not supposed to plug the 20 amp plug into the 15 amp outlet, but you can plug the 15 amp plug into the 20 amp outlet. Then we get into DC connectors, and this is where we get into a little bit of a wild west. There is one DC connector that I flat out refuse to use, but I guarantee every single one of you have one in your car. That is the cigarette lighter outlet. I'm not even going to show you a picture of it. I think that poorly of it.
It's a power outlet now.
What's that?
It's a power outlet.
Yeah, I don't think you light cigarettes anymore.
It's called... I am 55 years old. I was born in 1970. It is a cigarette lighter outlet. Okay?
It just doesn't light cigarettes.
It just doesn't light cigarettes anymore.
Yeah, I think there is a modification where you can't plug it.
Yeah, there's some little change they made to it to keep you from doing stupid things with it. But speaking of stupid things, this is a barrel coaxial plug. They come in a bunch of different varieties, and you will encounter them when you're working with low voltage DC. Philip has one right here that happens to be probably...
I have no idea.
That looks like a 7909. The four-digit number tells you what the size of the plug is. The first two digits are the outside diameter of the barrel in tenths of a millimeter, and the other two digits are the inside diameter of the barrel. And those 5525 and a 5521, I swear to the gods, were designed for the sole purpose of infuriating us by making sure that you either get a loose connection or that it just doesn't fit when it looks like it ought to. Then we have these genuinely beautiful connectors. These are called aviation connectors. This particular group are all called GX16, and I've highlighted one of them there for a reason, which I'll talk about in a second. The reason they're called GX16 is because they're 16 millimeters in diameter. The one I've highlighted there is a GX16-5, and we're actually going to use that in the setup. This beautiful, beautiful thing, very commonly found on solar panels, is called an MC4. Would anybody like to guess where the 4 comes from?
Millimeters.
It is 4 millimeters. Very good. The diameter of the contact inside the... If you look right here, you'll see there's an opening, and inside there is a round contact that is 4 millimeters outside diameter with some space around it. Inside here is one that is 4 millimeters inside diameter, and those two mate. And when you connect these two together, you have a connection that is tight, has a high contact surface, and it is waterproof. You could actually put this thing submerged for an extended period of time, and it'll come out dry. It's beautiful. The other thing that's noteworthy about it, go ahead, Gabe.
Two ends of the same cable?
These are two ends of the same cable, or they could be a dual of, yes. But the idea is, that I was actually about to talk about is that what they do is, on the source, they use the male connector for positive and the female connector for negative. And on the sink, they're the other way around. And the beautiful thing about that is not only can you connect the sources and sinks together, you can also very easily wire sources in series, which is good because we're going to do that.
Sorry.
No, not a problem. Oh. Go ahead. What you got?
Do they typically have a rubber seal to make them waterproof?
They do. It is actually... Right there. Yes, an O-ring is what you're looking for. Yes, absolutely do. Great question. And this one is a favorite among ham radio operators. This is called a power pole. They come in a couple different sizes. This is the smallest of the three sizes. And what they are rated for is 15, 30, or 45 amps. You can run up to 250 volts through them. But most people use them for 12 volts, which is what I'm using them for. So, how did this get started? Yes, sir?
The last plug, is how are they different than Anderson connectors?
They are the same.
Oh, they are?
Yes. Power pole is the... Anderson is the brand, power pole is the make.
Gotcha.
Okay? However, that said, there are many other companies that are now making these connectors. Most of them have Chinese names, but the fact of it is that the patent is now no longer under Anderson's control. So even though Anderson is still making these connectors, and they make arguably the best of them, there are a lot of competitors out there that are also making connectors. Hence, I refer to it as a power pole, not an Anderson.
Gotcha.
So
I believe there's more than three sizes.
There's... at least three I know of. We'll go with that.
Yes.
But what I will say, there was one thing I forgot to point about this, is that this connector, I kid you not, is gender fluid. So what I mean by that is that there's no concept of a plug or a socket. Any Anderson plug, any power pole plug, will plug into any other power pole plug. This allows you to connect a power supply to a battery to a load to a power supply. Any way you want to do them. That's why they're popular with hams.
A battery to a battery?
Yes, you can hook a battery to a battery, and I've done that recently.
Why?
Was it intentional?
It was intentional. May you ask why, which in particular?
That you attached a battery to a battery. To was it to charge the battery with the battery?
It was to equalize the charge between the batteries.
Ah.
Mm-hmm.
And also the individual, like you had the red and the black,
mm-hmm.
they actually can pull apart and you
they can
design your own plugs.
They can. I've also seen people do red, green, black if they wanted a grounded version of it. You can also go black, red. If you want to do a reverse polarity, you can stack them in various different directions. However, the way that I've shown them there is the, we'll say, typical arrangement. All right, how did I get started going down this path? It started with this thing. As some of you in this room have actually seen this very beast, because when this gathering used to happen at Starbucks, and we were sitting at a table in the middle of the room, not near any power outlets, I would bring this and set it under the end of the table, plug a power strip into it, and let people plug their laptops in, and it would last us for the evening. And that was kind of a helpful thing to have. The primary and original purpose to which I bought this, believe it or not, was to function as a UPS for my furnace. This has got enough power on the coldest winter night to keep the heat running in my house overnight. In the event that we have an extended power outage like we had a couple years ago, I could actually run the generator during the day, charge this and run the house, and at night I can shut the generator off and save fuel knowing that the house is going to stay warm. Finnegan.
You know.
So this is one of the ones that's like gasoline powered, not solar powered?
This is not gasoline powered. This is a battery.
How do you charge it?
Okay.
If you don't have, because you said you give it fuel.
Is it that?
Oh, I said, well, I have a gasoline generator.
Okay,
I said to save fuel. I use this to run the generator less. You can charge this from 120 volts AC here, and you've got two inputs up there that are for solar power. Does that make sense now?
Yeah.
You know, my power bank that is almost about to explode, that was for extended power outages.
You really need to get rid of that
thing. My mobile devices.
Preferably before it explodes.
Is it a spicy pillow?
It is a spicy pillow.
It was a photo I put in 2600. I don't know if you saw it.
I haven't heard that.
No.
So, go ahead, yes.
So, what kind of furnace are you running for how big of a house?
That is for a 1,200 square foot house, and it is a forced air gas furnace. And it's able to run, like I say, overnight. So about 8 hours on a cold winter night. Obviously, if it's running less, it will last longer. You know? It's a great question. So we bought this for emergency purposes, obviously. And we ran it for a couple of years, and I found myself going, you know what? It's great that we can run this thing off of the generator. We should have some solar power. And I said to my wife, you know what? I think we ought to have solar panels. And she said, yeah, I think we should. And I said, okay. And we bought these. So these are a portable solar panel. They came from Harbor Freight. When it absolutely positively has to work at least once. As it turns out, they're not half bad. These are 200 watts apiece. They produce 20 volts when they're in full sunlight. They have an open circuit voltage of 24.5 volts. We'll talk about that a little more in a second here. Actually, that might be the next slide. No, okay. And they have MC4 connectors on them. Pecron, who made that power station, were kind enough to include this handy-dandy adapter that'll go from MC4s to GX16, so I can plug it into the front of the power station.
What type of GX16, though?
GX16.5.
Okay.
That was the one I had highlighted in that
picture. Oh,
right, yeah. Yep. Okay.
Why is it 5? I mean, why does it have 5?
I don't know. That was a design decision that Pecron made. I have wondered that myself. What I do know is they take two of the pins on one side and make them positive, two on the other side and make them negative. The other one appears to be not connected, but I haven't confirmed whether or not it might be connected to the chassis ground. That's something that's on my to-do list when I'm not running around doing something else.
They probably did them in groups of two so they could carry enough current.
Oh, there's no question about that. I mean, they're putting 20 amps through the thing.
Yeah.
So it's a concerning the pin size. That's a lot of current to put through. But putting it through two of them, yeah, I could see that. Mm-hmm. This is the other thing I bought is I got some 10-gauge, 10-meter long. These are MC4 extension cord pairs. And what I did was my wife and I spent probably... I guess about 45 minutes one morning twisting them together so that they would stay together as a unit. And the idea was that this was enough that I could take those solar panels and put them in the middle of my backyard where they're not going to be shaded by anything and connect them either to the house or to my workshop.
So MC4 is only for one pole? Like you need two?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if we go back to that picture here. You can see basically what they did was they put what will happen is they'll put one on each end of the on each end, and it only, as you say, carries one pole. If you want to get a tandem pair, and honestly, that's what I thought I was buying was a tandem cable. It'll have a male and a female on each end. It's just that one will be on a red wire and one will be on a black wire. So. Look at the specs. Here's the specs for what the power station is capable of working with. I want to define a term here. MPPT is maximum power point tracking. So MPPT means that the device is going to modulate how much load it puts on your power source because it's going to drag the voltage down, but it's going to try to find the sweet spot where it's not dragging it down too much, and it's going to find that point where it's at the highest point in the power curve. And it can draw up to 800 watts through that input. It wants 32 to 95 volts, and anything up to 20 amps. Meanwhile, these solar panels put out 10 amps. They put out 20 volts. At 24.5 open circuit, they produce 200 watts when they're in full sunlight. Question: Is this panel compatible with that? So you're already thinking in the right direction.
I think you need four.
You need two.
Yeah.
The reason you need two is because when you put two in series like this, that will get you to where the voltage is now. Where this voltage here is now. In range of that voltage range there, and it'll work.
But the current, though, is the same.
This will take up to 20 amps. Okay. But it will, because it's doing that maximum power point tracking, it will know if it's putting too much load on the solar panels, and it'll back off.
Got it.
And when you put that together, like that, and then plug it into the GX16 plug on the front of the unit,
nice.
It produces power. And this was with a this was early in the morning, so the we didn't have quite full sunlight yet, but there we are.
How long did it take in general for it to mostly fully charge?
If I had taken it from zero, we would probably be looking at 16 hours at that rate.
Yeah.
If you were to... No, 16 hours? No, that's if you run it on 12 volts. Hold on.
Well, it can't be 16 hours because there's not that much.
No, 800.
Daylight.
Should be about 4 hours if you charge it at 400 watts.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's not bad. Not bad. As you can see, you can draw a fair amount of power from the thing. Right now I have it, in this particular picture, I have it powering my table saw. So it provides a fair amount of juice, and it seems to be okay at handling inductive loads. So that's nice. Down at the bottom there, it's got that figure where it says 2.9H. It's telling me, yep, I can keep this up at this rate for 2.9 hours. At that, we're going to shut down. If you want to, you can get super picky about how you point your solar panels. You can use anything that will give you a right angle and cast a shadow to make sure that you're not casting a shadow. I found that after several experiments, the extra 10 watts I got was really not worth it. I also learned that if you lay them flat on your lawn, they will cook your lawn.
Oh.
So don't do that. I did say I was going to talk about some of the problems with the system. In a nutshell, if you care about your lawn, don't do that. It actually took 3.5 weeks for that to become green again. Because it didn't. And that was from 4 hours. So, yeah, don't do that. So then a thing happened.
Uh-oh.
I got a message from a buddy of mine. And this buddy of mine says, "Hey, I hear you like solar power." I said, "A little." He says, "Over at Benson's Pet Supplies in Clifton Park, there is a stack of solar panels sitting out by the roadside with a sign by them that says free." That is the day that I learned that you can fit 8 solar panels in a Ford Escape.
Nice.
That's why you need an SUV.
How many were left at the site there?
Enough that I made a second trip and could have made a third one.
Oh my gosh.
So I have 16 of these. These are 100 by 160 centimeters. So 39 by 50 some odd inches, if you prefer. 244 watts. What's that?
And they were just free.
And they were just free.
Why?
And they had the... A thing that I have figured out is that these systems have got a book value and a real value. Mm. The book value is, after a certain amount of time, it's completely depreciated, and from the business perspective, it's not worth anything anymore. Mm. And they figured out that it was cheaper to dispose of them by putting them out at the roadside with a sign that says free than paying somebody to cart them off.
So it was in front of a company.
What's that?
It was in front of a company.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't like
Benson's Pet
person.
Supplies.
You think Benson was using them?
They were. They were up on their roof for about 15 years.
How heavy are they?
Great question. You know, I don't know. I don't have a lot of difficulty picking one up and carrying it, but they are awkward.
Mm. Okay.
You know, they degrade
over think they're heavy?
Time and performance, right?
They do. But not much. These are actually still performing per spec.
Wow.
Fun?
Are you heavy enough, you think, 8 of them twice is what took your tranny out?
No. No, I think my quick PSA, don't buy Ford. Okay, enough said.
Yeah, Matt had a Ford Fiesta.
I know, and it's got the same transmission my Escape had in it. Yep.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, yeah, if you have a Ford, you may want to consider shedding it now before the transmission dies, especially if you've got a 6-speed. Okay, anyway.
Did you just have those? When you transported them, did you put sheets between them, or
I stacked them in pretty much the way they were stacked by the roadside. So, no, I didn't put anything protective between them, but they all, 16 of them, arrived home intact, and all 16 arrived home with the with all of them with 2 MC4 connectors on them, so I didn't even have to wire them. All I had to do was just plug them in.
How much would you expect to buy these? Like, if a private seller had these and was trying to offload them, how much would you expect to spend on one used solar panel like that?
I don't actually know what they would go for used. New, I know that you're looking at about $200 a panel there.
Wow.
Given that they still, Leo, right?
Leo, yeah.
What's that?
Leo. Yeah.
Liam, sorry, my bad. Liam was saying that they do degrade over time, but from my tests, these things are still running per spec, and they're 15 years old. And typically they've got about a 30 to 35, maybe even 40 year service life to them. They're not quite as efficient as the Predator panels I showed you earlier. These are only spec'd at 15% efficient, and the Predators are spec'd at 20. But
this is a 15-year-old design.
These are free panels.
Yeah. You know? Complain about free.
This is how the specs line up. And again, the question arises, is one of these panels compatible with that power station? No, you got to use two. No biggie. Obviously, I used two. And then I did some, yes, there's what it looks like if you put two of them together. I did some experimentation with, this is literally propped up on four sticks.
Nice.
A short distance away, because I discovered that sitting against the building there, they were getting shadowed in the early afternoon by the eaves. And then I went nuts.
Nice.
So you might notice there's this nice white fence in the background there. That's about 2 years old. And I, when the fence was put in, I had the installer save all of the fence posts from the wooden fence that was there before. And I took six of them, and I bought three really big honking carriage bolts, and I sunk three of those posts into the ground and set the other three on the ground, angled it at 42 degrees. Why 42 degrees?
Because that's the
way it's right.
All of you are... all. Okay, aside from the hitchhiker's reference, you are all correct. Yes, it is our latitude, 42 degrees north. And that
so that's the angle that the equator would be at.
Uh-huh.
That's so interesting.
Yeah, isn't it?
Yeah.
And cleaned the site up, and that's roughly, it's a little cleaner now but than when I took this picture, but that's roughly what it looks like.
You also made a little fort, inadvertently. You can go under there and just hang out.
It does get quite warm under there. Remember what
I
was saying? Remember what I was saying about the panels cooking the lawn? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does get quite warm under there. So, I don't know why I put this slide in a second time. Yes, I do. It's because of the fact that I wanted to point this out. We now have a potential of 976 watts of output, but the controller can only handle 800. So this introduces an interesting phenomenon, which is called clipping. Now, all of the hams in the room probably cringed when I said clipping, because in amplification, clipping is a very bad thing.
Yep.
In solar power, it's a great thing, because it means that you are maximizing the potential of your charge controller. It means that you've got extra panels out there, and if you've got a cloudy-ish day, you may still generate enough power to be appreciable. So, yeah, the charge controller on this power station can only take 800 watts, and when these panels are in full sunlight, it will indeed produce 800 watts, and I've seen it do it.
Awesome.
But I did not catch it photographically. This was the best picture I was able to capture of it operating, and it was 692 watts. I'll take it. That's free power from free panels on a piece of equipment I already had. So then a thing happened. And I decided, I came to a realization. The realization was that the inverter in this, well, it is a nice, clean sine wave inverter and has a nice high power output, its standby power usage was kind of high. If I were to just turn on the inverter in that power station and leave it on with nothing else going on, nothing even plugged into it, it would be dead in 36 hours. But I had this other inverter sitting around collecting dust. It's not a great inverter, it's not a powerful inverter, but it met a need that I had, which was to charge my lawnmower. And that inverter only uses 5 watts when it is idling. So I plugged my battery chargers for the lawnmower into it, got myself a power station, and then I started getting a little bit nuts and adding lithium iron phosphate batteries to the mix.
So that's where the flammability comes in.
Nah, lithium iron phosphate batteries are safe. But here's the problem. I couldn't quite bring the thing up to full charge. So I bought this. This lovely piece of Chinese kit is a
Make Sky Blue.
I actually love that brand name because it's the first time I've seen a Chinese brand name that didn't sound like somebody dropped a keyboard down a flight of stairs. Okay. But more to the point, it actually says kind of what the goal is here. And this can work with a 12, a 24, or a 48-volt system. Obviously, this is a 12-volt system. It can work with up to, basically, it can produce up to 60 amps into whichever voltage your system runs at. It can work with lithium batteries or with lead-acid batteries. So here's the new calculus. Now, here's the fun thing. You could actually run this thing on one panel if you wanted to, because it only needs 20 volts to operate. But my question is, why would you? You just got to use more power.
Get that clipping in there.
Get that clipping in there. Yes, exactly. By the way, did you notice? The clipping point is higher. I can get 880 watts out of this when the battery is close to full. Now, the obvious question is, why is that a range and not a solid number?
Is it dependent on inductive load and like power factor?
No. No, it's all DC.
Oh, right.
Efficiency?
No.
Is it dependent on the incoming voltage?
Getting closer.
Incoming amperage.
You're wandering a little away. It's the outgoing voltage. If the battery is, it's the set point is not based on power but on current. It's a 60 amp charge controller. So when the battery is near empty and running at about 11 volts, you get about 660 watts out of it. When it's full and the battery is sitting at 14.4 volts, you're going to see a little bit north of 800 watts out of it. So yeah, that's the reason.
Wait, so it charges faster when it's almost charged?
The output of the charge controller is current constrained. So when you are at a higher voltage because you are more closely to fully charged, yes, your actual amount of power that you are passing increases, but the current holds solid at 60 or whatever it can extract. That's the gist. Because I scratched my head on that one too for a bit. So I totally get where you're coming from. Also, I was amused by the similarity to a very popular Meanwell power supply and figured I will just throw a picture of the two of them side by side here. Build the system out a little bit. Right now, we are looking at a setup which has got way too little, way too thin wiring on it. But what I will point out is, at the very least, we have fuses everywhere. Everything going in and out of here is fused, and this right here is a fuse. So if something were to go a little bit over current, it would break the circuit and hopefully keep us out of trouble. Remember what I said at the beginning. As you can see,
hopefully you can cook some eggs beforehand.
Although, yeah, I guess. 321 watts, this is coming off of those two panels that were propped up on the sticks, 57 volts. That's the input side. On the output side, 13.6 volts, 23 amps. Not half bad. So then a thing happened. That inverter that I was using died.
Oh, yep. You asked too much of it.
I didn't feel like I did. I cared for that inverter. I loved that inverter. I gave it something to do, and it repaid me by blowing a fuse. Mm-hmm. And when I first looked at it, I figured, okay, well, maybe the problem here is just that I was asking too much of it. So I went to replace the fuse, and when I replaced the fuse, it damn near welded the next fuse into the fuse socket because it failed in a dead short. So let's have a word about fuses. Don't. Don't be Ed. Don't use pennies. As I pointed out a minute ago, there's a whole bunch of fuses up there in a DC load center. There's an MRBF ice cube fuse, they sometimes call them, sitting on the bottom there. Just to give you a close-up view, that's what the load center looks like. You can bond all of your negatives down on those terminals on the bottom, and positives go one per fuse all the way up. Now, you'll notice that in this particular setup, this stud here and that stud up there are not connected. They get connected later on. Right now, I'm just backfeeding it since I was only feeding it 30 amps anyway. And this is a close-up of one of the MRBF fuses. They come in a basically, the idea is that you can take this and put it on a binding post of some sort. Could be a post on a battery, could be a post on a bus bar. And this is electrically insulated from this down here. This here surface makes contact with this here, and there's an identical surface on the other side that then makes contact with a ring lug that you put on your cable. Then you put the two washers and the nut down on top of that, tighten it down very tightly, and you're good to go. Then I bought these. These are the bus bars. Those are 10 millimeter studs on this, and this is quite a beefy thing. You can pass up to 300 amps through this at up to 48 volts, or at least that's what the rating is. The fuses just mount on it like that, and that's what you do for all of your high current applications. And there's a cover on it to keep you from shorting it out, which would be what they call a very bad thing. And it ended up looking a little more like this. Now it's starting to actually look sort of respectable. Sort of. I did say sort of. Then I bought these. And they look at first like ordinary light bulbs. But when you look closely, you see that it's rated 12 to 24 volts, AC or DC. And that is a standard E26 base, just like you see on your regular light bulbs. So you use the same fixtures, just wire them for 12 volts, and off you go.
What does the 26 mean?
The 26 means it's 26 millimeters diameter.
Wow. Well, there you
That's
go.
That's crazy.
It's back to millimeters.
Yes, it is.
It stands for Edison.
How do you...
Correct.
How do you measure where the base is, though? Because it's there's threading in the socket.
It's here. It's at the peak,
so the peak
of
the trough. Or, okay.
Yeah, if you put a...
The peak
if,
of the troughs, that's not...
Yeah, that thing. If you were to put a caliper on it, it would measure 26, across the threading, it would measure 26 millimeters. That is, I believe, the correct answer.
Okay.
Hey, Freak, is there a different National Electric Code? I can't recall for DC. I don't think that there's... different ampacity, but there might be different ratings for contactors and things like that.
There absolutely are, and we'll talk about that in a minute.
All right.
This was my victory lap. When that light came on, this light, by the way, has not worked in 22 years. Now it does, and it runs on 12 volts DC. This is where I was going to talk about that, Mike, because you'll notice these switches look a little bit different. So let's have a word about DC switches.
Okay.
So I pointed out early on that there's a point in the AC cycle where the flow actually comes to a stop before it reverses and goes the other direction. Alternating current switches rely on that. They put enough of a gap between the electrical contacts that if any arc forms between the electrical contacts. When the power flow reaches that 0 volt mark, it stops. It quenches the arc. And that prevents the arc from sustaining over a long period of time. It can't sustain for more than 1/120th of a second. And therefore, the circuit opens. If you run DC through that same switch, under the circumstances where an arc would form, that arc is going to stand, and your current is going to keep flowing, and it's not going to shut down, and it's going to get real ugly real fast, so you get switches that are rated for DC. Philip?
Would it be, would the arc have a maximum sustainability for 1/100th of a second in Europe? Because...
Yes.
Of the 50...
Yes. You are correct, sir.
Okay.
Yep. It's half of an AC cycle. Yep. Absolutely. Then a thing happened.
Uh-huh.
I decided that this could use a little bit of dressing up. I had this in my shop.
Looks flammable.
Probably is. But, you know, the system was sitting out in the open already anyway. So it wouldn't make much of a difference if I went and did that, which I did. You will also notice, by the way, over time here, that those battery cables have gotten substantially beefier. We are now up to
12 volts, man.
We are now up to 2-gauge wire. So we could push up to 115 amps through that wire. Which is fine, because the battery can push a maximum of 100. Or at least that's what the fuse is for.
For everything you've neatly mounted, I love how the light bulb is just standing.
Let's talk about the light bulb! So the question is, what's this light bulb doing here?
Keeps the cabinet warm.
Correct. That's at least... That is at least the goal. It is incandescent. That is at least the goal. It is there to keep the cabinet warm so that the batteries continue to function in the winter. This, I am going to tell you, has not worked as planned and is one of the things that I am still figuring out. But I've tried various things. I have also tried running higher voltage light bulbs at lower voltages so that they generate heat, but not as much heat as they might if they were running normally. But not enough heat, apparently. I'm up to 100 watts inside that cabinet and still haven't quite hit the point where the batteries are happy.
Maybe some copper pennies would heat it up a little.
Or get an easy bake going.
The other thing...
It's a special bulb, isn't it?
Not originally. Oh, now there's networking.
So here's the other thing I wanted to point out is that right there you'll notice a whole bunch of wires just emerge. So where did they come from? And the answer is here. This is the other side of that wall. So I set up a conduit that goes through the wall into the back of the cabinet and out through the outside of the building. All right. Who knows why there's that loop of wire there?
Service loop?
Bingo.
Water.
Nope. He had it right. It's water control. It's water control.
Ah.
So if water should take an ocean to run along that cable, it'll drip off of that point rather than running into the conduit.
And want it going on the battery?
It would, and that would be what they call a bad thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So.
Or a short circuit.
And then that dangles off and goes on to my array there. As some of you have noted, yes, there is network stuff in the cabinet as well. This right here is an uplink to my house so that I have full access to my network from my workshop.
Is
it
parabolic pointing at it?
It is not. No. I unfortunately never ended up using that parabolic. I still have it, though. Yeah. No, the unit there is a Ubiquiti nano station, and I have one of those on each end of it. And I found that they do a bang up job of getting the connectivity out there. It's a very solid, not super fast, but a very reliably solid connection. Probably didn't notice the inverter changed again. Moved up, not because I killed another inverter. The other one, I'm happy to say, is still alive and well and kicking and very happy to do my bidding for me. But I needed to get a bigger one because I bought this fucking thing. This is an electric snowblower, and you need about 600 watts to be able to charge the batteries out of it. So I needed an inverter that could produce that. Yes, sir.
Okay, so I've been thinking about this since the you said charging your lawnmower, but now I'm just going to say it. So why are you taking like the 20-ish volts or whatever DC, converting it to AC
to convert it back to DC? I would that I had a solution to do otherwise, but they are all proprietary battery packs with proprietary charger bases. Yeah. That's an excellent question, and I was actually hoping that somebody would notice that and ask that question. Thank you, Liam.
That was you. I'm here to help.
Two of them. It added to the demand, so I added more batteries. And that brings us close to where we are today, but I want to show off one final feature. And this is one that is going to be what we'll call maybe a little bit less than obvious. You can actually start to see it in this frame, but we'll do a close-up. So we have this outlet sitting below the cabinet with two different colored outlets. And there's a reason why they are color-coded. The two on the right will stay live anytime that the inverter is turned on. And the two on the left, there's a relay inside this box that will disconnect the two on the left when the battery voltage drops below 12 volts. And it will leave them disconnected until the sun hits the solar panels again. And that is a fun feature of the charge controller that I'm using it in a way that's slightly different than they intended, but it works like a charm. So that
funky relay you needed?
That is that funky relay I needed, and I still need one because I need a slightly better solution than what I've got now. But you are you're spot on to observe that. The other bit of funkiness that I have in mind there is that come summer, I want to try to set it up so that the swimming pool pump runs off of solar power as long as there's enough power to run it. And when there isn't enough power to run it, that relay will kick the power over to grid power. But I want it to pause. I don't want it to go snap from one to the other because I don't want to destroy the pool pump. So.
I want to update your system to the Victron that has like the PLC-like functionality with some of the contactors and controllers.
You're not wrong, but I gotta be honest with you, Mike. I have been enjoying the tinkering aspect of this thing, and that's really the part that I think I wanted most to share with the group tonight is the tinkering, because it's the tinkering that makes this hacking. Any other questions?
I just wanted to check. So you got the free solar panels.
Yes.
And you want what all are you managing to run off of them? You got your lawnmower in the summer, the snowblower
in the winter.
So what are you getting off of them in a given chunk of time?
I can run all of the lights in my workshop. I can run all of my power tools out there, including, as you saw, the table saw, which is I bring that one up because that's the most energy-intensive power tool I have. It has a one-horsepower motor, so that is going to be 750-ish watts of load. I can run any of those things out there, and I have 2.5 kilowatt hours of power in storage to run them with.
And that's enough to power you for 16 hours, overnight?
It really depends.
Running, but
well, I mean, I can go out there at any time and turn and flip the switch, and the lights will come on. So yes.
Okay.
So, yeah, Kyle.
Is there a portion of the shed that's wired into the main house system? Like, do you have a cutover between these two, or are they just entirely separate and independent from each other?
Most of the grid, power wiring that was out there is still intact and in place. I just don't use it.
Okay.
I use it occasionally if I need to. The main thing is that the two lighting circuits have been disconnected because they've been cut over to 12 volts DC. Mm-hmm. And combined into one lighting circuit because they don't really need to be two. Yeah. The lighting out there, for whatever reason, the prior owner of the property put two 20-amp circuits in for lighting. And I can power all of that lighting on one 5-amp, 12-volt circuit. So maybe it was a hair overkill.
Yeah, just a bit.
In New York, is there the arrangement they have in California where you dump it back into the grid excess and you get a discount? Or
you can do that. This system is in no way set up to do that. I have deliberately maintained this system as separate from the grid. That is a personal decision. Somebody else I know who has collected some of those same free solar panels has a, what do we want to call it? Shall we call it a slightly less than regulation setup that is indeed backfeeding power into his house. Any other questions? Yeah, Chris.
Does he have an appropriate, just out of concern for the National Grid workers, does he have an appropriate disconnect from the grid?
Yeah, he does. It's not known to National Grid, but it is a synchronous inverter out of necessity, which means that in the event that there is a voltage drop on a line, the inverter will power itself off because it needs the AC there from the grid to synchronize too, otherwise it can't operate. I don't condone that. That might be partly because of the fact that I have history in the industry. But, I mean, to each their own. I'm not going to judge. Any other questions? All right, well, that's what I got. So.